Session number 5382, Reel 3.
Mrs. Taylor, Reel 3.
I can remember being told that I had to because it wasn't convenient for me to stay, that the first mother couldn't cope with me any longer because she had her own family to see to, and that it had been agreed that I would go on to this family anyway. So I just had to accept it, went very reluctantly.
Did your parents have anything to do with that?
No, they must have known that it was all going to happen anyway, but I hadn't been told, of course. It's rather distressing.
Mm. Might have been easier if
yes.
You had known.
There was this awful thing, children just weren't told anything, and it was very distressing.
How was it for your sister, losing her spokesman?
Well, I think she must have been quite lost, although by that time she would have settled in and got to know the other two children and have been getting along with them. She was rather a timid child. But then we went to school, so the new term must have started. We'd been there through the summer, and I don't remember going to school immediately we got there, but I remember going to school later. Whether they let us have several weeks without going to school so that we'd settle in, I don't know. But then I met up with my sister at school. We didn't visit or have anything to do with each other otherwise, just at school. So I was very pleased to see her. And by this time my brother had moved again, and he'd come from Armley to a family in Horsforth, and he was at the school.
Why had he moved?
Well, he'd been with a young family, a young couple with a very small baby, and he was 12 years old. And whether he hadn't fitted in, I don't know. Whether they found him too much to cope with, having a very small baby and this galumping great 12-year-old boy, and he must have been a naughty boy. And he was moved to a family, a very wealthy family. The husband was a local businessman. I think they had a son in the Royal Air Force. And this I find strange. So I don't think he could have been a conscientious objector. He was probably just a local man who took us in, or took my brother in, out of sympathy. But my brother was very happy. These people had a big house. It must have been out on the edge of the moors somewhere, because I can remember going to visit him. And they had a maid, which was very, very unusual at that time in the war. It was very odd for anyone to have a maid then. So, of course, he had a lovely time. He was thoroughly spoiled. They thought the world of him. And when I met up with him at school and asked, how are you and what's your family like? And he, oh, great, they're super, I'm having a lovely time. And he, I think, was happier than we were. But then he was older and he could understand and communicate more than we could. But I can remember going to this school and they had separate entrances for boys and girls. And I'd never come across this before, because I went to a mixed school and we all went in the same door. So I was horrified at this. And then the next awful thing was separate playgrounds. And the boys had to go and play in one playground and the girls in another. And I thought this was shattering. And I can remember talking over the wall to my brother and saying, why can't I come in and play with you? Oh, the girls aren't allowed in here. But I couldn't understand why they segregated us. That to me was really weird, very odd.
How did the lessons compare?
Oh, well, I'd done everything before, so obviously we were more advanced in our lessons. I don't know whether this was different education authorities or what, or whether children in the South were considered brighter or quicker witted, I don't know, but very boring lessons, and I seem to know it all. I can remember being asked to stand up and read out loud in the reading lesson. All the children had to stand and read aloud, and then they were given marks. And I was asked to stand up. I can't remember what it was I had to read. And I read what I thought was a passage beautifully, faultlessly. And the teacher said, right, sit down, 8 out of 10. And I was so disgusted. I'd never been given 8 out of 10 before. It was always 10 out of 10 or 9, perhaps, on an off day. I was so disgusted, I must have decided on a policy of non-cooperation after that. So I remember getting into trouble.
How did the teachers compare? I mean, their style, their personalities, with what you had known at home?
Stricter. To me, dour. Not friendly. They weren't friendly teachers. Must have been kindly. Spinsterish. Old, I thought. Anyone over the age of 15 was old. It was a nice little school, a stone school again, and quite light classrooms, wooden floors, because every time we moved about we made a terrific noise tramping. And the hall of the school where we gathered for assembly, the roof went right up into the rafters, which I found very quaint, because I had gone to a fairly modern school, brick-built.
If you, your brother and sister, were all in the same school, it must mean they didn't have separate infants and so on.
No, I don't think they did. It was quite a big school. There were quite a lot of children. The classroom I was in, there must have been 30 or 40 children. I don't remember little ones in the playground. They were all more or less our ages, or my brother's age. So it was probably a junior school and not an infant's. I don't really remember that.
How did you do at the school after that unfortunate experience?
Well, I suppose I must have done my lessons properly. I liked my lessons. I don't say that I ever liked school. I didn't much care for discipline. And I didn't like teachers who weren't very warm people. I suppose I must have been sensitive to their emotion towards us, and they never seemed to regard us as human beings. We were just things who were taught. But I definitely decided I wasn't going to work very hard after the marks for reading. I don't think I was disruptive.
Can you tell me about the second house you stayed in? After all, you were there a few months.
Yes.
You were there rather longer than the first one. You said it was modern. What sort of size?
Well, the strange thing was, although it was modern, I suppose being built within the last decade, it had a coal oven in the wall, in the kitchen. And the lady of the house did her baking there. It was like a kind of range, I suppose, but fired by coal. And I found this very old-fashioned, having read about things like that in books and fairy stories. And this I found strange. It wasn't a bungalow. I seem to remember it as a bungalow, but it wasn't a bungalow because I can remember going upstairs to the bedroom. It was a much smaller house, much more confined than the other one. And there were two daughters. One was much older. She must have been a teenager. And then there was a daughter of my own age, whose name I remember and who I played with all the time. We got on quite well together. I quite liked her. I almost regarded her as a sister eventually. I wasn't quite going to grant her that accolade.
How did you feel about sharing a room and bed with her?
Oh, I didn't mind at all. I was used to sharing, and we shared a double bed. And I didn't mind at all. We used to cuddle up to each other at night when we'd frightened each other with ghost stories, I suppose. So that didn't bother me at all.
Did these houses in Horsforth have inside plumbing?
Yes.
Loo and bath?
Yes. Oh, yes. All mod cons, running water, no central heating, of course. Central heating was unheard of in those days. But coal fires, and I don't remember them not having a fire. Obviously, if they had coal for cooking, coal was rationed, of course, whether they would get an extra allowance because they had to cook by it. So there were adequate supplies of coal. I don't remember it being too hot either, although it was summer, late autumn perhaps, when I was there, and it would have been very hot with a range to heat for cooking. I don't remember it being hot.
What was the father of the family's job?
Again, I don't remember. I know he was a businessman and he travelled into Leeds, as far as I remember. And he wore a suit. So obviously he was a businessman. She didn't wear a suit otherwise. But I honestly don't know what his profession was or where he worked. And I don't remember asking or being told.
Were these families paid to have you?
I think they must have been. Again, I don't know. There must have been a fund. I don't know who even would donate to it. My father certainly couldn't have donated to a fund other than a subscription, perhaps, to be a party member or a member of the PPU. But where they got these funds from, I don't know, because there wouldn't have been that many sympathetic people. But I never thought of things like that. Didn't think of money. But they must have been paid for our food, at least.
Did you have any source of pocket money for yourself?
No money at all. Don't remember ever having anything to spend or going into a shop to spend. I can remember back before the war, going into sweet shops with money to spend, but I don't remember any sweet shops there at all.
Well, of course, sugar was rationed.
Yes, but obviously they must have had coupons for us. My
yes.
father must have taken our ration books. But
yes.
I don't remember going in. And travelling on the tram, of course, our fares were paid for by the adults. I can remember being taken on a picnic and we seemed to walk for miles, and I can remember we came up a steep path on the top of a ridge, and down at one side was a deep gully, and it was very pretty and it must have been a lovely day, and we seemed to have walked for miles and we were taken onto the moors, and I think this was Ilkley Moor, because I remember my father singing the song when we came back home on Ilkley Moor, Bartart. And I looked across on the horizon and there were rooftops and big chimneys, factory chimneys, and lots of smoke, and it didn't look very pleasant. And I can remember asking, where is that? And I was told it was Halifax. So the name Halifax has stuck in my mind ever since. But I thought the contrast between this beautiful place where we were having our picnic with lovely tumbling streams and then this grimy city in the distance, they didn't seem to go together somehow. Then another time we were taken on the tram into Leeds, And we were taken to some botanical gardens. I don't think it was a zoo, but I can remember walking through gardens with flower beds and railings. And I liked the journey on the tram. And we went past a ruined abbey and with water, a river or something beside it. And I remember asking, what was that? And I was told it was Kirkstall Abbey. So that's always stayed in my mind. And I thought that was lovely. I liked the ruins. And then, of course, just after that, we got into the suburbs of Leeds and it was all dirty and smoky. Quite a long tram ride, and it only cost pennies, as far as I can remember.
How was your health while you were there?
Oh, yes, well, I think we were fit. I don't remember having a cold. We didn't have any infectious diseases, but I did have to have a tooth out. This is when I was staying with the first family, and they took me to the dentist. Privately, and I can remember going into the dentist surgery, and it was obviously it was a milk tooth which had to come out, which was very loose and bothering me. And the dentist said he was going to take it out, and I was very frightened. And he said, "Oh, it won't hurt. I'm going to put something on it." And I can remember he put a paste, seemed to spread a paste on my gum. And then he got hold of his pincers or forceps or whatever they were. And I can remember the terror as he went to grip this tooth. And the next moment he was waving it in the air saying, "Here it is." And I was still waiting for it to come out and I hadn't felt a thing. And I think I must have asked what he put on my gum. And I seem to remember being told it was cocaine. So it must have been some kind of cocaine paste. My first experience of a local anaesthetic.
Had you been to the dentist before at home?
No, I don't think so. I can remember lots of horrific trips to the dentist afterwards, because when we got home, once when I was at the dentist asked where I'd got my accent from. And I can remember saying, "Well, I've just been staying in Yorkshire." So I must have gone back home with a Yorkshire accent. But I was very impressed with this dentist that he hadn't hurt.
How about doctor? Were you ever ill?
No, didn't see a doctor. Or wasn't ill at all. We must have been quite robust children. Considering the diet we'd had in the previous years. We obviously benefited, I should imagine, from a better diet in Yorkshire. The fact that it was summer and there wouldn't be many coughs and colds about, because we had none of us been immunised as children. My father, again, didn't believe in vaccination or immunisation, so we hadn't been vaccinated for smallpox or diphtheria. What else? Whooping cough and whatever the other one was. So we could actually have been very unhealthy, and we could have carried all sorts of horrible germs with us. We could have caught things like diphtheria, which must have still been rife then. So we were quite healthy children.
What did they feed you in Horsforth, apart from that first banquet?
Well, I don't really remember much about food after. I don't remember longing for food. It must have been adequate. I don't even remember having school dinners. So we must have gone home for dinner from school. But it must have been an adequate diet. I don't remember having a lot of meat. I don't even remember problems of shopping, where the woman of the house complained or had problems about getting meat or saying that the butcher hadn't much that day. I don't remember anything like that, which I had always noticed at home. My mother had always said, "Oh, I couldn't get anything at the butcher's today." Or, "Oh, the butcher had sausages in today and I waited in a queue for an hour." I don't remember anything like that. I don't remember queues. So whether these families had their groceries delivered by a boy on a bike, perhaps that was the case. Obviously, shopping must have been different there, and the acquisition of groceries and things. I don't remember being taken on shopping trips or even being sent to do any.
Was the style of cooking of the woman of the house any different from what you were used to?
Oh, yes, obviously. My mother had a gas cooker, and this lady who cooked on her coal range or stove or whatever must have had problems, but I wasn't really aware of them. I didn't consider things like how meals were produced. Being so little, the only thing that mattered was that I got it inside my stomach.
I was referring to the nature of the food more than to the nature of cooking. I wondered if there were local dishes or something that were different.
Yes, I don't remember having much porridge. I hated and couldn't eat. It made me wretch. And whether they produced porridge and this happened and so I wasn't given it again, I don't know. Of course, there weren't things like breakfast cereals. I think we must have had bread. I don't remember having bacon and egg or anything like that. It was just an adequate diet. Even things like dried peas, which I loathed. I don't remember being given any food which upset me or which made me want to retch or which I thought was horrid or hadn't had before. So we must have had fairly healthy appetites and been happy to eat what was given us.
What was the standard of discipline in the family?
Reasonably strict, not very different to what it was at home. We were not chastised physically. I don't remember ever being smacked. I can remember being told off about doing something, and I felt as if I'd done something very disgraceful and felt very ashamed.
Do you remember what it was?
Yes, I suppose it's rather embarrassing, really. Because this other girl and I shared a bed, I suppose that was intimate in itself. And it was when we got undressed, and I, perhaps coming from the south of England, where perhaps we were a little wiser, I don't know, but I can remember explaining various parts of her anatomy. And the mother came into the open door, bedroom door was open, it was all quite innocent. And her look of horror on her face, and she was obviously very prudish, and she must have said, "Get dressed straight away, and don't you dare do that again," or something. And I was very puzzled, because it had seemed a natural thing to me. This child had said, "Well, what's this and what's that?" And I had told her in childish language. And I did feel rather the way the cat does when he slinks into the corner. I felt like that. And I think our relationship must have been strained after. So I wasn't very happy after that.
I was going to ask you why you weren't happy in that family. The food seemed to be all right, the house seemed to be all right, the daughter of the family was pleasant, and so why didn't you like it?
Well, there wasn't any warmth. Although my parents' relationship was strained at home because of what had happened, there was always a warmth. We could always get a cuddle if we wanted it. We could always climb on my father's knee and he'd read us a story if we asked him, and he wasn't too tired. I don't think there was any of that. There wasn't any warmth, there wasn't any touching, I wasn't cuddled. We really were strangers, and we felt strangers, and they regarded us as ships that pass in the night, I suppose. We were there for a limited period and we would soon be gone. But it got to the stage where my mother began to get upset by our letters. My sister and I wrote, without knowing it, we both wrote her letters, pleading to come home. Please could we come home? We were unhappy. And I think we must have been getting quite distressed. She had obviously got it from our letters. And nothing was said. I can remember coming home from school one day and being told my mother was in the other room. And I was beside myself. And I rushed in and she said, I've come to take you home. And then everything was rather urgent and rushed. They must have put her up for the night. And she was quite determined to take us. So there must have been a little bit of bad feeling. Perhaps the family were upset. But she was quite determined that we were going home with her the next day. And this is what happened. My brother, of course, was thoroughly enjoying himself. He hadn't written any letters home at all. He was having a whale of a time. And he did, in fact, stay on much longer. And we left him there.
Did she intend to take him home at the same time?
No, I think she realised that he was quite happy. She probably thought he was better left where he was. I think she thought she couldn't perhaps give him what he had there if she took him back home because he was older. And I don't know how much longer he did stay, probably only another couple of months. But he certainly didn't come home with my sister and I. And so, of course, our joy, I know I couldn't sleep that night, the fact that we were going home. And I had no regrets at all about leaving. None. And I don't even remember saying goodbye to the people, but of course we must have done. And certainly the first family were much nicer people. I was happier with them. And I think in the end my sister got on quite well, although obviously she was homesick because she wrote these letters home. And then she must have been lonely when I was moved, when we were separated. And my mother kept a letter for a long time afterwards my sister had written, because she was only 7, so she'd only just learned to read and write. And she wrote home and said, this was always a family joke afterwards, she'd written and said, we had rhubarb and custard for dinner, which of course was rhubarb and custard, and she didn't know how to spell it. And that was a family joke for years.